Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we're speaking with Susan Combs, who is a Missouri girl in a New York world and president of Combs & Company, a full-service insurance brokerage firm based in New York City. And Susan, thanks for joining us here today on EPN.
Thanks so much, Eric. I appreciate it.
And certainly our pleasure, and thanks for your time and for coming out. So Susan, tell me, I'm a big fan of pancakes. Tell our listeners the pivotal pancakes for Rogers story to lead things off here today.
So Pancakes for Roger actually became a movement. I was one of the caretakers for my late father who passed away about 4 years ago. And he and I were pretty regimented people. My father was a two-star general in the Air Force, and he was also a civilian judge. And so our schedule in the morning kind of looked like I would get up, I would check on him if he was good. I'd go to the gym and I'd come back and check on him again. If he was good, I'd go and shower and get ready for the day and then come get him rallied around and help him with his tube feeding. And the latter part of his life, he passed away ultimately of Agent Orange related throat cancer. And he had a feeding tube and he also was on oxygen. So one morning when we were kind of going through our routine, and I came down from showering and I went to his hospital bed because we were fortunate enough to have hospice at home, and he wasn't there. And so then I went to the living room and he wasn't there. And then I went to the kitchen and he was sitting at the table and he was setting the table. So he had his placemat and he had his, you know, silverware all set up. And I looked at him and I said, "Dad, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I want pancakes for breakfast." And it broke my heart, because if anybody's dealt with somebody on a feeding tube, I mean, that's how they get their nutrition. And I looked at him and I said, "Oh, Dad, there's just nothing more that I want than to give you pancakes for breakfast. But you have a feeding tube, we're on hospice, you have a DNR, and if you choke, we're done here. And I just don't think we're quite ready to be done." And he looked at me and he said, "Oh, yes, I can." He said, "Matt said I could." And Matt's my brother and he's a nurse, and he wasn't there that day. So I knew we were dealing with some confusion from the oxygen levels being low. So I took his feeding tube formula over to the microwave like I always did and heated it up for 14 seconds because that's what the general wanted. Never 13, never 15, always 14. And I brought it over and set it on the table. And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "That's your syrup." And so his oxygen levels had started rallying around and he kind of nodded to me and he said, "Okay." And, you know, a couple of weeks later, my father passed away and I took one day off work and I came back to New York City. And my husband says, "Why don't we just go have some pancakes for your dad?" And so that's kind of where the whole premise started. So my husband snapped a picture on social, you know, and we put it on social media and I told the story and said, "You know, if you're so inclined today, go have some pancakes for Roger and appreciate the good things that you have in your life. Because at the end of the day, it's the little things that really add up to be the big things." And so it kind of exploded from there. People started having pancakes. They started hashtagging pancakes for Roger. And so I have an alliance, and I'm actually on an advisory board for the University of Missouri Veterans Clinic that is run by the law school there. And they provide free legal services for veterans and their families navigating the VA claims and appeals process. So my father's birthday was in February, February 22nd. And so for every month of February on social media where we get people enjoying pancakes and hashtagging pancakes for Roger, my company, Combs & Company, makes a donation in his honor to the Veterans Clinic. So that's kind of how the whole movement started. And then it just, this past February, we had, oh my God, we hit 18 countries, all 50 states. Thousands of dollars were donated to the Veterans Clinic, and it's just been a lot of fun. And then I had a book that came out this February as well that gives kind of some fun antidotes and lessons that my father gave me, as well as other mentors too.
Well, that is quite a story and touching, no doubt about that as well. And what an impact this story has already had in such a short time. And we do appreciate your joining us here today to talk to us about this as well. I'm sure there are plenty of things we can learn. Now, talk to us about the Slaying Dragons part of the book's title. What advice do you offer your readers to help them feel like they are slaying dragons? I'm sure they would appreciate some feedback on that.
So I actually fought for this title. My book team, it originally was Pancakes for Roger, a mentorship guide for life. And then I popped up awake at 2 a.m. and I said, "A mentorship guide for slaying dragons." And my team was like, "I don't know, Susan, I don't know." And I said, "You don't know me yet." I said, "Once you know me, you know this is right." And so, because, you know, slaying a dragon is just, you know, overcoming an obstacle. We all have obstacles in lives. We have, you know, work things, we have family things, we have unexpected things that pop up on our radar. And I was always taught that if you get good advice, it's your duty to share it with somebody else. And I realized that not everybody comes from great families. Not everybody had a great father like I did. So I try to, you know, pass along this wisdom from him and other mentors that I've gotten. And if somebody doesn't have a mentor, I encourage them to just use this book until they find somebody that can mentor them too.
That is awesome. Quite a resource right there. Also, what are some of your favorite lessons that you learned from your dad? Tell us some of those.
So I think one of my favorite ones is drive the car. So, you know, I live in New York City, you know, largest city in the United States, but I grew up in a town of 986 people in the northwest corner of Missouri in a small farming community called King City. And those of us that grew up around a farm were all driving at a much younger age. So I think my dad actually was driving at 6. I think I drove for the first time when I was about 9 or 10, just on the farm. But then, you know, as I said, my father was a judge, so we abided by the laws when it came to highway driving. So when we were learning how to drive, I mean, each one of us kids, my dad just would have this cadence of drive the car, drive the car. He'd say, you know, you could be the best driver in the world, but you have to anticipate what's going on around you. My father was a combat helicopter pilot in Vietnam, and he always said, you know, there's always things that you can't anticipate. So, you know, he would literally jerk the steering wheel, make you go off the road, and you had to keep your composure, you know, keep your wits about you and, you know, take your foot off the accelerator and just navigate off the road and then navigate back on and just drive the car. So that really became a metaphor for my life. Anytime I had something that came up that I didn't know how to do and I felt overwhelmed, I just said, okay, let's just drive the car. Let's put first things first, break it down into bite-sized things that are digestible, and then go on my way. So this actually came into play when my dad was on hospice. I mean, you know, we had a lot of medications around the house, and one day he actually took his nighttime meds in the morning. And so that made him, you know, really groggy and lethargic and sleeping all day. And so the drive the car moment for that was like, okay, let's put away all the medications and only leave out what he can take at night so that it keeps him safe. And then we know that he's not taking something he shouldn't. So it's been something that I've shared with a lot of people. And a lot of people have said, hey, when something comes up, I'm like, just drive the car, just drive the car. So that's one of my favorites, I would say.
And I too can certainly appreciate that. Good stuff there. Now, you offer many lessons specifically to your female readers. Can you relay some of those lessons for us now as well?
So I would say one of them, you know, I graduated college in 2001, and it was an excellent job market. And I had 8 different job offers. And so spring break, my dad brought me to the East Coast to look at a lot of the different properties that I was offered jobs at. And because I was ultimately supposed to work in the Marriott at the World Trade Center. And we drove through a nor'easter, and, you know, he was just kind of giving me some life lessons. And my dad told me, he said, you know, Susan, there's 3 facets of your life. He said, there's the person that you're with, there's the thing that you do for a living, and there's the place that you live. And he said, if you're happy with 3 out of the 3, you're living a golden life. Even if you're happy with 2 out of the 3, you're doing pretty good. But he said, if you're only happy with 1 or none, only you are the one that can get off your butt and do something about it. So a lot of times I think people just kind of get settled or they get stuck, and they don't realize that they have the power within them to change their situation. So there's one of my favorite quotes from Marcus Aurelius is get active in your own rescue. And I think sometimes we can just get stuck in the minutia and just stand in the center of the room and say, who's going to save me, and realize that we have to save ourselves. So that's probably one of the lessons that I pass along to a lot of women that I've mentored, because I think a lot of times people just don't realize that they can make changes if they need to. I mean, life isn't stagnant, right? I mean, it isn't, you know, just because you wake up today and say, hey, I'm living in New York City, doesn't mean that New York City's forever. You know, if your drive and your desire is to live in the mountains, then, you know, make a plan and then you can achieve that.
That right there is very motivational. I'm sure listeners found that to be motivational as well. Excellent. Today we're joined by Susan Combs, president of Combs & Company, a full-service insurance brokerage firm based in New York City. She's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, you have some amazing lessons that are quotes from your loved ones, including, don't let your alligator mouth overload your tadpole behind, no step for a stepper, and every trash can has a lid. Now, I like that one, by the way. What do these sayings mean, and what are the lessons behind these sayings?
So don't let your alligator butt over or alligator mouth overload your tadpole behind was from my mother. So I was a kid that was just, man, I was a big personality from the womb. And so my mom just always wanted me to not get too big for my britches. So that's always been something that I've tried to keep in check, because I can shoot my mouth off and I can tell you exactly what I think. But sometimes it's important to remember to stay humble and true to your roots too. And the no step for a stepper, that actually comes from my father. I believe that's actually a Marine Corps saying. And I have that tattooed on the inside of my wrist. I got that tattooed on the inside of my wrist my father's birthday after he passed. And he used to say that to me all the time. I mean, I was a kid that I wasn't the book smart kid. I was a street smart kid. So when it came to school and everything like that, I had to study, put my nose in the books. And, you know, I did well in elementary and high school, but I really had to work at it in college. And my dad used to say, "Ah, Suze, you got this. It's no step for a stepper." So just meaning that, you know, you can achieve it as long as you have the drive to do so. And every trash can has a lid. That comes from my mother-in-law. She grew up in a steel town, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. And she just always said that. I mean, my husband and I have been together for over 18 years. And I think I heard her say that the first month we were together. And she was like, "Oh, every trash can has a lid." Just basically saying there's somebody for everyone. I'm somebody that doesn't buy into the whole, like, there's one soulmate for you. I believe there's multiple people out there that you're compatible with and that'll you can have a happy life with. And so my mother-in-law just always said, you know, every trash can has a lid. There's always somebody for everybody.
Brilliant sayings, and they stick for sure. I love it. Now, see the signs is one of your lessons in the book. What are some of the signs you have seen over the years?
So I'm a big believer in signs, especially from somebody that you've been close to that's passed. I feel that the people that are passed, I just think that they're just without, you know, just outside of our reach. And, you know, when it was the year anniversary after my father passed, my friend Angela Ye gave me a book called Signs, The Secret Language of the Universe by Laura Lynn Jackson. And it talks about asking the loved one for signs. And it's just like getting a big hug. So for my dad, sunflowers are a big sign that I get from him. So sometimes if I'm having a bad day, I'll just say to him, you know, like, "Hey, Dad, I really need to feel it today. I need you to show up." So helicopters, since he was a helicopter pilot, and sunflowers are two big ones. And also repeating twos for me, since his birthday was on 2/22. And that's actually when my book came out, was 2/22/22. So I think that as long as you're open to those things, I think you get them and you just have to ask for them. So I've actually talked to a lot of people that have lost loved ones and kind of guided them that way. And it's just been something that I think is pretty beautiful if you're open to it.
And speaking of which, of those that we have lost along the way, our loved ones, how can listeners be proactive through grief? Get into that from your experience.
So I grief hits people in different ways. And, you know, I'm sure every single listener has lost somebody. And sometimes, you know, I have a good friend that the funeral of his mother is today, and he's giving the eulogy. And, you know, I texted him this morning and I was like, "Oh, you know, there's going to be times that you just think you're going to break into, but you won't." And I was like, "The words will come, and you need to show up for yourself." And so for me, to navigate through grief, service was a big part of my story. So a year after my father passed, I actually became a hospice volunteer to just kind of give tribute to the hospice people that helped take care of my dad. And just to do something for somebody else. I think sometimes with grief, it's a very self-centered place. And sometimes we don't realize how self-centered it is. But if you can kind of, you know, move a muscle, change a thought, get out, go take a walk. Sometimes you're just paralyzed by grief. But if I found that if you do something for somebody else, it takes the focus off your grief, and then it channels it into a positive way that you can help somebody else.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your feedback there. That is appreciated. Now, also one lesson is be in love even at the third sight. Tell us the story behind that lesson, if you would.
Oh, God. I'm the unabridged or the abridged version. my husband and I, we met at a Manhattan Chamber of Commerce networking event. And I was actually married at the time when I met my current husband. And, you know, I was married. I wasn't looking for the next husband by any means. And, you know, I met him at an event and we were networking. He owned a technology firm and I hadn't started my firm yet, but I was working for an insurance brokerage. And, there was something about him that I was like, oh, he's a nice guy. And then we got together for a one-on-one and we had a breakfast. And I was like, oh, you know, about a month later, we ran into each other and then we had a breakfast and learned about each other's businesses. And that breakfast took about 2 hours. And then I started thinking, I'm like, wow, I kind of have a crush and I should not have a crush. And I don't know what I'm going to do with this. And, you know, I put together a happy hour with a bunch of friends. And I even told my girlfriends, I was like, I want you to talk to him, but don't really talk to him. Like he's the licked cookie. You can't try to go out with him. And, you know, my first husband wasn't a bad guy. But he just wasn't the right guy for long-term. And, after that happy hour, I went out to a rooftop with a couple of girlfriends. And one of the girlfriends took a call with her partner, and she's British. And she said, oh, Luke, I can't talk now. Honey, Susan's either going to have an affair or leave a husband. And I heard her and I heard it. And she got off the phone and I said, you're right, I'm done. And literally I took the train home that night to Westchester. My husband picked me up. And in the drive home, I said, I'm done. And he said, you're what? I said, I'm done. I said, I'm not happy. And I'm done here. And so I resolved that marriage. And then Sean and I've been together ever since. But it was one of those things that, again, like I don't recommend it. But I think I also saw that I deserved more. My current husband just wasn't, I didn't have the mushy love feelings. And my first marriage was very calculating. I mean, I literally called my CPA and I said, yeah, we love each other, whatever. Is it better for my taxes to get married before the end of the year or after the first of the year? And he said, well, he's unemployed. You have a significant difference in income. Do it before the end of the year. And that's how I decided to get married, for taxes and health insurance. And I thought that if you didn't have, I was 23 when I got married the first time. I thought that if you didn't have the mushy love feelings, you could cultivate them, and you can't. And if they're not there, they're never going to be there. And so I think at 23, I grew up a lot in a year of marriage and realized that, you know, I had changed. My husband hadn't. So no fault of his. I just decided that I wanted more for myself. So anytime somebody actually, I had a girlfriend that shared with me a couple of days ago that she had gotten divorced. And the first thing I said was, congratulations. And she has a daughter. And she said, you know, not everybody says that. And I said, look, I said, I think one of the best things you can do as a parent for a child is to show them how to be happy. And if that's with or without their other parent, you know, they can appreciate that and they can see that they deserve to be happy and not just stuck in a relationship to be stuck in a relationship. So,
well, I will say this, not to get on a rabbit trail here, but I think culture has people get married quicker than they should. And that getting married is one of the biggest decisions in one's life. And a lot of people take that lightly, and it is so important. And obviously your story kind of backs that up as well. Really do appreciate you're joining us here today. Before you go, how can readers learn their worth? That's something everyone would like to hear a little bit on that.
So when it comes, I think if you're in like a sales capacity or a business owner, you need to know how much you're worth per hour. And anytime you can do that calculation, it makes saying yes and no to things so much easier. So I always tell people that it's just like, if they don't know how much they're worth per hour, I mean, and seriously, to do that calculation, I mean, you take what you make a year and divide it by how many, you know, hours you work per year. And then you kind of understand that, so that when somebody asks you to mentor them, or somebody asks you to meet for coffee, or to, you know, whatever, do a volunteer work, you know exactly what you're giving up and what you have to replace. So I know it's like a, you know, sometimes people think, oh, you do things because you love to do things. Yeah, absolutely. But I think once you know, like, you know, I think, what am I worth right now? I think I'm worth like $387 an hour. And so I know that, okay, if I'm going to say yes to coffee and it takes me a half hour to get there and it's a half hour there and a half hour back, okay, I'm giving up, you know, 2 times 187. And then I understand that that's what I have to replace income wise. You know, what do I have to sell to replace that? So I think that it's just an easy way to kind of look at things. And then, like I said, I mean, sometimes I think, especially as women, we can be people pleasers and we feel guilty to say no. And we feel like we have to say yes to everything. But once you know, like, okay, what does this really mean to me financially? It makes it so much easier when you need to say no.
Well, Susan, it has been great to have had you with us. Can't thank you enough for your time and joining us here today. And tell listeners where they can not only get more information on the book, but as well as your firm, Combs & Company.
Sure. So the company's website is www.combsandco.com. So everything's spelled out, C-O-M-B-S-A-N-D-C-O.com. And then Pancakes for Roger, I mean, you can find it on Amazon, or you can just go to www.pancakesforroger.com. The website's actually pretty cool because it gives some backstory about my dad. My dad had a 4-page Wikipedia page, served our country for 39 years and 4 months, in 3 branches of military service. So it gives some highlights about him. And it also gives pictures of our pancake map and a lot of our social media shares from Pancakes for Roger campaign that's going to be coming up again and getting started in February again this year.
Yeah, for sure. February just around the corner. Again, Susan, all the best. Thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Eric. Have a good day, too.
Again, we've been speaking with Susan Combs, president of Combs & Company, a full-service insurance brokerage firm based in New York City. And per the conversation, 2 websites of importance to check out. It's pancakesforroger.com and combsandco.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.